Chapter 10. Dog's head, down in the grounds, and uttering cries of distress. He went there to see about it. The dog had a young bird in his mouth, unhurt. The gentleman rescued it, and put it on a bush, and brought the dog away. Early the next morning the mother bird came for the gentleman, who was sitting on his veranda, and by its maneuvers, persuaded him to follow it to a distant part of the grounds, flying a little way in front of him, and waiting for him to catch up, and so on, and keeping to the winding path too, instead of flying the near way across lots. The distance covered was 400 yards. The same dog was the culprit. He had the young bird again, and once more he had to give it up. Now the mother bird had reasoned it all out. Since the stranger had helped her once, she inferred that he would do it again. She knew where to find him, and she went upon her errand with confidence. Her mental processes were what Edison's would have been. She put this and that together, and that is all that thought is, and out of them built her logical arrangement of inferences. Edison couldn't have done it any better himself. Why? Do you believe that many of the dumb animals can think? Yes, the elephant, the monkey, the horse, the dog, the parrot, the macaw, the mockingbird, and many others. The elephant whose mate fell into a pit, and who dumped dirt and rubbish into the pit till bottom was raised high enough to enable the captive to step out, was equipped with the reasoning quality. I conceive that all animals that can learn things through teaching and drilling have to know how to observe, and put this and that together, and draw an inference, the process of thinking. Could you teach an idiot of manuals of arms, and to advance, retreat, and go through complex field maneuvers at the word of command? Why? Not if he were a thorough idiot. Well, canary birds can learn all that. Dogs and elephants learn all sorts of wonderful things. They must surely be able to notice, and to put things together, and say to themselves, I get the idea now. When I do so and so, as per order, I am praised and fed. When I do differently, I am punished. Fleas can be taught nearly anything that a congressman can. Why? Granting, then, that dumb animals are able to think upon a low plane, is there any that can think upon a high one? Is there one that is well up toward man? Yes. As a thinker and planner, the ant is the equal of any savage race of men. As a self-educated specialist in several arts, she is the superior of any savage race of men. And in one or two high mental qualities, she is above the reach of any man, savage or civilized. Why? Come. You are abolishing the intellectual frontier which separates man and beast. I beg your pardon. One cannot abolish what does not exist. Why? You are not in earnest, I hope. You cannot mean to seriously say there is no such frontier. I do say it seriously. The instances of the horse, the gull, the mother bird, and the elephant show that those creatures put their this's and that's together just as Edison would have done it, and drew the same inferences that he would have drawn. Their mental machinery was just like his, also its manner of working. Their equipment was as inferior to the Strasbourg clock, but that is the only difference. There is no frontier. Why? It looks exasperatingly true, and is distinctly offensive. It elevates the dumb beast to. Let us drop that lying phrase, and call them the unrevealed creatures. So far as we can know, there is no such thing as a dumb beast. Why? On what grounds do you make that assertion? On quite simple ones. Beast suggests an animal that has no thought machinery, no understanding, no speech, no way of communicating what is in its mind. We know that a hen has speech. We cannot understand everything she says, but we easily learn two or three of her phrases. We know when she is saying, I have laid an egg. We know when she is saying to the chicks, run here, dears, I found a worm. We know what she is saying when she voices a warning. Ook. Hurry. Gather yourselves under Mama, there's a hawk coming. We understand the cat, when she stretches herself out, purring with affection and contentment and lifts up a soft voice and says, Come, kitties, supper's ready. We understand her when she goes mourning about and says, Where can they be? They are lost. Won't you help me hunt for them? And we understand the disreputable Tom, when he challenges at midnight from his shed, You come over here, you product of immoral commerce, and I'll make your fur fly. We understand a few of a dog's phrases and we learn to understand a few of the remarks and gestures of any bird or other animal that we domesticate and observe. The clearness and exactness of the few of the hen's speeches which we understand is argument that she can communicate to her kind a hundred things which we cannot comprehend in a word that she can converse. And this argument is also applicable in the case of others of the great army of the unrevealed. It is just like man's vanity and impertinence to call an animal dumb because it is dumb to his dull perceptions. Now as to the ant, why? Yes, go back to the ant, the creature that, as you seem to think, sweeps away the last vestige of an intellectual frontier between man and the unrevealed. Oh. That is what she surely does. In all his history, the Aboriginal Australian never thought out a house for himself and built it. The ant is an amazing architect. She is a wee little creature, but she builds a strong and enduring house 8 feet high, a house which is as large in proportion to her size as is the largest capital or cathedral in the world compared to man's size. No savage race has produced architects who could approach the Aryan genius or culture. No civilized race has produced architects who could plan a house better for the uses proposed than can hers. Her house contains a throne room, nurseries for her young, granaries, apartments for her soldiers, her workers, etc., semicolon and the multifarious halls and corridors which communicate with them are arranged and distributed with an educated and experienced eye for convenience and adaptability. Why? That could be mere instinct. It would elevate the savage if he had it. But let us look further before we decide. The ant has soldiers, battalions, regiments, armies, and they have their appointed captains and generals, who lead them to battle. Why? That could be instinct too. We will look still further. The ant has a system of government. It is well planned, elaborate, and is well carried on. Why? Instinct again. He has crowds of slaves, and is a hard and unjust employer of forced labor. Why? Instinct. He has cows, and milks them. Why? Instinct, of course. In Texas she lays out a farm 12 feet square, plants it, weeds it, cultivates it, gathers the crop, and stores it away. Why? Instinct, all the same. The ant discriminates between friend and stranger. Sir John Lubbock took ants from two different nests, made them drunk with whiskey and laid them, unconscious, by one of the nests, near some water. Ants from the nest came and examined and discussed these disgraced creatures, then carried their friends home and threw the strangers overboard. Sir John repeated the experiment a number of times. For a time the sober ants did as they had done at first, carried their friends home, and threw the strangers overboard. But finally they lost patience, seeing that their reformatory efforts went for nothing, and threw both friends and strangers overboard. Come, is this instinct, or is it thoughtful and intelligent discussion of a thing new, absolutely new to their experience? With a verdict arrived at, sentence passed, and judgment executed? Is it instinct? Thought petrified by ages of habit, or isn't it brand new thought, inspired by the new occasion, the new circumstances? Why? I have to concede it. It was not a result of habit. It has all the look of reflection, thought, putting this and that together, as you phrase it. I believe it was thought. I will give you another instance of thought. Franklin had a cup of sugar on a table in his room. The ants got at it. He tried several preventives, and ants rose superior to them. Finally he contrived one which shut off access, probably set the table's legs in pans of water, or drew a circle of tar around the cup, I don't remember. At any rate, he watched to see what they would do. They tried various schemes, failures, every one. The ants were badly puzzled. Finally they held a consultation, discussed the problem, arrived at a decision, and this time they beat that great philosopher. They formed in procession, crossed the floor, climbed the wall, marched across the ceiling to a point just over the cup, then one by one they let go and fell down into it. Was that instinct thought petrified by ages of inherited habit? Why? No, I don't believe it was. I believe it was a newly reasoned scheme to meet a new emergency. Very well. You have conceded the reasoning power in two instances. I come now to a mental detail wherein the ant is a long way the superior of any human being. Sir John Lubbock proved by many experiments that an ant knows a stranger and of her own species in a moment, even when the stranger is disguised with paint. Also he proved that an ant knows every individual in her hive of 500,000 souls. Also, after a year's absence, one of the 500,000 she will straightway recognize the returned absentee, and grace the recognition with an affectionate welcome. How are these recognitions made? Not by color, for painted ants were recognized. Not by smell, for ants that had been dipped in chloroform were recognized. Not by speech, and not by any signs nor contacts. For the drunken and motionless ants were recognized, and the friend discriminated from the stranger. The ants were all of the same species, therefore the friends had to be recognized by form, and feature friends who formed part of a hive of 500,000. Has any man a memory for form and feature approaching that? Why? Certainly not. Franklin's ants and Lubbock's ants show fine capacities of putting this and that together in new and untried emergencies and deducting smart conclusions from the combinations, a man's mental process exactly. With memory to help, man preserves his observations and reasonings, reflects upon them, adds to them, recombines, and so proceeds, stage by stage, to far results, from the tea kettle to the ocean greyhound's complex engine, from personal labor to slave labor, from wigwam to palace, from the capricious chase to agriculture and stored food, from nomadic life to stable government and concentrated authority, from incoherent hordes to massed armies. The ant has observation, the reasoning faculty, and the preserving adjunct of a prodigious memory. As he has duplicated man's development, and the essential features of his civilization, and you call it all instinct. Why? Perhaps I lacked the reasoning faculty myself. Well, don't tell anybody, and don't do it again. Why? We have come a good way. As a result, as I understand it, I am required to concede that there is absolutely no intellectual frontier separating man and the unrevealed creatures? That is what you are required to concede. There is no such frontier, there is no way to get around that. Man has a finer and more capable machine in him than those others, but it is the same machine, and works in the same way. And neither he nor those others can command the machine. It is strictly automatic, independent of control, works when it pleases, and when it doesn't please, it can't be forced. Why? Then man and the other animals are all alike, as to mental machinery, and there isn't any difference of any stupendous magnitude between them, except in quality, not in kind. That is about the state of it, intellectuality. There are pronounced limitations on both sides. We can't learn to understand much of their language, but the dog, the elephant, etc., learn to understand a very great deal of ours. To that extent, they are our superiors. On the other hand, they can't learn reading, writing, etc., nor any of our fine and high things, and there we have a large advantage over them. Why? Very well, let them have what they've got, and welcome. There is still a wall, and a lofty one. They haven't got the moral sense. We have it, and it lifts us immeasurably above them. Oh. What makes you think that? Why? Now look here, let's call a halt. I have stood the other infamies and insanities, and that is enough. I am not going to have man and the other animals put on the same level morally. I wasn't going to hoist man up to that. Why? This is too much. I think it is not right to jest about such things. I am not jesting, I am merely reflecting a plain and simple truth and without uncharitableness. The fact that man knows right from wrong proves his intellectual superiority to the other creatures. But the fact that he can do wrong proves his moral inferiority to any creature that cannot. It is my belief that this position is not assailable. Free will, why? What is your opinion regarding free will? That there is no such thing. Did the man possess it who gave the old woman his last shilling and trudged home in the storm? Why? He had the choice between succoring the old woman and leaving her to suffer. Isn't it so? Yes, there was a choice to be made, between bodily comfort on the one hand, and the comfort of the spirit on the other. The body made a strong appeal. Of course, the body would be quite sure to do that. The spirit made a counter appeal. A choice had to be made between the two appeals, and was made. Who or what determined that choice? Why? Anyone but you would say that the man determined it, and that in doing it, he exercised free will. We are constantly assured that every man is endowed. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.